Hi, it's Dave. Welcome. So today I'm joined by Emmett Peppers for another chat on Tesla investing. We're going to talk about Lucid, Rivian, EV tax credits, even some politics. Emmett, how's it going?
I'm doing great, Dave. It's been a while. You've been road tripping it for a while, so we haven't really caught up in a few weeks here. But yeah, good to chat with you. I saw your visit to Starbase, your highlight video there. It looked pretty amazing to be visiting and camping out there.
Yeah. Actually, I didn't think it was that long since I chatted with you because we met up just like a few weeks ago, it seems like, in Southern California.
August, yeah.
Yeah. So it didn't seem too long. But when I checked our video chats, it's been like over 6 weeks. So I figure it's time for an update here.
It's been a while.
Yeah. So I had a great time hanging out with my family, taking an RV trip from California to Texas, checking out Starbase. I got to see the Austin factory yesterday with my kids, and they just loved it. You know, it's like almost finished right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, how far were you from the actual factory? Like a mile? I mean, from the picture, everyone seems like there's probably a big perimeter or border, but how close did you get?
Yeah, it's actually pretty close. Probably like, 50, like actually by 30 or 40 yards.
Okay, that's pretty very cool.
Yeah, I got to fly my drone around the factory a bit.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. So, definitely lots of fun. Wanting to catch up with you. Lots of stuff to talk about with Tesla and the markets, et cetera. So first off, with Tesla's record delivery, 241,000 cars for Q3.
Yes.
What's your take on kind of the numbers? Were you expecting that high, or were you kind of, more conservative going into it?
I mean, I was thinking maybe it'd be in the mid 230s after all these, information gets out quick at the last end of the quarter between like the China analyst, I forget the Twitter handle, and some other people that seem to have, inside info almost on the deliveries of China, and then Troy Tesla, has a good beat on the US and Europe, I would say. Mm-hmm. And, he does a great job of combining it all. And I think he came down at like 235 for his final estimate, 235,000 or something like that. So that's about, I just kind of go off what he's the expert on that for the most part. And usually within like 1 or 2% at worst, so yeah, 241 was at the high end. And, I think there's going to be a lot of subsequent record quarters going forward. And, you and I both remember the last time the stock ran up 10x from 2013 to 2014, there was a lot of record quarters going on after that. And everyone was like, oh, great record. And we were all rooting because we're long Tesla, right? But the stock, languished in a range for several years, 5 years, it didn't, even though there was record quarters each quarter over quarter, it was sort of priced in from that 10x return in that short period of time of the stock. And I kind of worry that maybe it's sort of the same thing where the price went up 10x in 2019, 2021, and we're going to have all these record quarters. It's going to be great if you're long Tesla, if you're long-term long, but if you're hoping the stock's going to go up short-term with options or just trying to play it short-term or being impatient, I think you have to watch out on your expectations of the stock movement. I mean, I hope I'm wrong and the stock reacts very positively Monday, and it could, that'd be great. I'd love that. Nothing more than that. But I just remember from our first rodeo, the expectations of the stock moving up, didn't turn out to be fruitful time and time again from 2014 to 2019. I mean, what do you think, Dave?
Yeah. I mean, I remember back in the day, during those 5 years, it's like every quarter, people were thinking, oh, it's going to be a beat and we're going to see the stock price jump. And it's like for 5 years, it just felt like it was the same story. Sometimes it beat, sometimes it didn't, sometimes disappointed, but the stock price kind of just languished in this range. Definitely brings back some memories. I actually was kind of surprised because when I saw the leaked email by Elon earlier in the quarter, in early September, he kind of sounded like he wanted to avoid a bad result. Like they had to really work hard to avoid this, bad result because the earlier production in the quarter was very limited. They didn't have enough parts. They had to add parts later. So they basically had a bunch of cars that were finished without some parts in Q3. And so I figured, that if Tesla came out this quarter with just squeaking by, like meeting expectations. I thought it would be a fantastic quarter. So I was actually surprised that Tesla delivered 240,000 vehicles. I thought it was just fantastic. And then it just sets up a lot of things because we know that early Q3, they had some production problems. And so that means they figured out how to resolve that by the end of the quarter. And that means we're probably entering Q4 at above a 1 million annual run rate right now. So we're going to probably have a great Q4 if things go, you know, smoothly. Of course, there's like, you know, the EV tax credit news and people might postpone, you know, orders. But it seems like the delivery times are being pushed back so far. People probably just might take delivery, you know, regardless of the tax credit. So, yeah, it does look like it's setting up to be this like, you know, quarter after quarter, you know, and who knows when this like these record quarters will end, because you've got like, and I think a lot of this is planned by Elon and his team. It's planned to basically stack upon each other. So you've got the Model 3, you've got the Model Y, you've got Shanghai, then you've got, you know, Austin and Berlin. And a lot of people are thinking, oh, it's going to ramp all of a sudden, Austin and Berlin. But my thought, actually, it's not like that. It's actually going to ramp pretty slowly in the beginning. But that's, you know, partially because it's really difficult, but partially because, you know, that's how you work it. You stack it, like every quarter.
Quality control, all these new people,
Exactly. So every quarter is going to be like this record quarter. You have Cybertruck, Model Ys, you know. And so for the next probably like 6 quarters, you're going to see a lot of stuff happening. And then you're moving into the next generation, the $25,000 vehicle after that. So a lot of runway, I think, you know, in terms of just
demand. And there's going to be, I mean, just because we have like these record quarters, I mean, 20% sequentially from one quarter to the next, I'm really impressed with, from like 205,000, whatever it was, 241,000 deliveries. That's really impressive. I don't think they can do 20% sequentially every quarter. You know, maybe they'll do 5-10%. Maybe one quarter they'll do 20%, another quarter 10% or 5%. So I think that's going to go on, like you said, for many quarters to come with these factories coming online. But it doesn't mean the stock's going to go up 20% in line with that. You know, we've talked about the disconnection between stock price movement and the underlying business. You know, the stock went up 10x. Their volume didn't go up 10x in 1 year. I mean, they're already priced as the most valuable, you know, company that makes vehicles in the world by far, at $800 billion market cap. You know, they're already priced at like a behemoth of a company, you know. So it's hard to say if the stock's really going to take a leg up to like a trillion plus market cap in the near future or not. I mean, that's, you know, there's a lot of people that are kind of short time investors in Tesla, and, you know, we're all impatient. We all want to see our accounts go up, and it's always painful when it goes down, you know, 10 or 20%, but it's possible we're in this kind of big range of, you know, $500 or $400 to $1,000 or whatever for a while. And, I'm just trying to make my own expectations set for that, given what we've been through. You know, hopefully it's not a 5-year range. Hopefully the full self-driving comes to fruition much faster. And I think that's the huge leg up to get it to a multi-trillion-dollar company. But until the full self-driving really is proven and mass adopted, I think that the multi-trillion-dollar market cap is a ways off.
Yeah.
All right.
So I want to actually talk about stock price. So what are your expectations? Do you think, we're recording this on Sunday evening.
Yes.
And I'm going to try to just put it out tonight, you know, as quick as possible. Okay. But yeah, what do you think will happen tomorrow? Will it go up? Will it, you know, stay stagnant or will it go down?
Yeah, I'm really uncertain. I mean, I put out a Twitter poll almost exactly 24 hours ago. And I put 4 choices in there for, you know, short-term investors interested. And I said, you know, where do you think the stock will trade at the end of day on Monday? Like after everyone's traded on Monday, where do you think the stock will close at, basically? Like under $660, you know, I mean, $760, because it closed at $775 on Friday. So is it going to close under $760, like more than a 2% down move, or is it going to be between 760 and 790, which is sort of like noise, I think, of any given day. It goes up or down 1 or 2%, so that's almost inconsequential for the news in a way, or just nullified or whatever. And then I said, you know, between 790 and 825, which is like, you know, 5% around that increase? Or do people think it's going to be 825 plus at the end of day Monday, like meaning like a real meaningful, you know, pickup? And I put those four categories in because myself, I'm trying to think like I'm so uncertain that those are the four categories I put at 25, 25, 25, 25% probabilities at this moment, you know, because I think it could do any of those equally. And that's why I picked those kind of tiers. And the people, you know, several thousand people voted, and it turned out to be like, you know, 50% of people picked the first two options and 50% of people picked the second two options. I forget, it was like most people picked the middle options. But yeah, that's about where I am. That's a good news that not everyone picked 825 plus, though, because if you know, most of the people that follow me are Tesla bulls. And so if the Tesla bulls aren't like don't have such high expectations, all thinking it's going to be like 825 plus right now on Monday, to me, that's a good, at least a silver lining that, you know, there's more room that we could see a potential real upside, because when everyone starts thinking the stock's going to go to the moon the next day, I feel like that's when it doesn't, you know, it just seems to be a contrarian trick to us all the time. Yeah.
I think there's one kind of factor, which is, I don't know if it'll play through, but one factor is this idea where there isn't this immediate short-term kind of respite, meaning you don't see a quarter where Tesla's gonna like have a hard quarter. Like usually Q1 of earlier in the year, it's like usually Q1s are the weakest quarter, or you see kind of like a plateau of kind of they've reached kind of full capacity in a factory or something, and they're just going for a couple quarters. But it seems like you don't really have that right now. You have only like higher production in Q4 and then Austin and Berlin in Q1.
Yeah.
And it seems like you're trapped. If you want to buy Tesla, you've got to buy it sooner than later. Think. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think that could be a bit of a unique situation right now where it's kind of like, the past quarter or two, people were kind of like, okay, maybe there's going to be weakness, right?
Yeah.
Or something. And then
I'll wait for that weakness. That
exactly.
Week
but now it's almost like you're cornered and there is no weakness anymore. So if you want to buy, you have to buy. And if you want to sell, like you're short, right? You want to cover your shorts and you better cover or something. So I think that's one thing that might be unique. The other thing is, I think if the market is, like Tesla, I think is heavily influenced by macro, the market at hand. So if we see a big red day, obviously Tesla probably won't be up much at all. But I think if the market is generally up, I think we might see a good 15 to 20 point increase, if not a little more. We'll see though. Yeah, everything is up in the air.
Definitely. I mean, just that I think that 825 plus is even like a 25% chance in my mind. That's to me, that's, you know, bullish, because normally like a 50 point move up on the stock, I think on any given day is like a 5% chance or something like that on any given day. But I think it's definitely, and like you said, not only the quarter over quarter, you know, catalyst for the, you know, medium term investors, but even the shorter term, like swing traders that trade for, you know, buy on the rumor, sell on the news kind of thing. I think some of those people are going to be convinced to hold on longer because they know that the annual shareholder meeting is happening for the first time from Giga Texas. I mean, is there something special planned with that? I don't know. Could it be some unveiling? Who knows? But that's kind of a surprise. And then there's also the Giga Berlin party that Elon's, I'm sure, going to be attending, and maybe he'll announce something there. I don't know. It's kind of cool. It's a small thing, but you know, anytime he's doing some kind of Tesla event, you never know. And then you have, then 2 weeks later is the earnings, and there's the gross margin surprise that most people are starting to catch wind on. And hey, this 241 operating leverage, it's going to, I think, show really incredible gross margins quarter over quarter. And it's sort of being talked about now, I think, as another upside surprise. Yeah. So with those three things in the next 3 weeks, I think you'll have some amount of like normal swing traders that sell on the news kind of decide to hold on longer or just buy back in or something like that.
So on a funny note, my wife, she usually, when I tell her the quarterly delivery numbers, usually she asks like, oh, is that good? Or, you know, like she like wants like my explanation, right? But this quarter, she was like, she didn't need that explanation. She's like, oh my gosh, that's really good. And so it was like one of the first quarters, like she actually caught it right away. And she's like, you know, that's a lot higher than last quarter, 200,000 to 240. Plus, it's like a million, almost a million annual run rate. And so she was able just to catch that right away. And yeah, it's pretty dramatic, 20% quarter over quarter, getting to a million run rate, and you're just getting started with two new factories coming online. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I think, one of the most bullish kind of optimistic positions Tesla has been in for, you know, a very, very long time, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, if the Tesla stock can't break out of like this, you know, 500 to 900 range it's been in this year, the last year, whatever, if it can't break out of it in the next few months, like, you know, we're probably going to be stuck in this range for a long time, that means to me.
No, no, but I mean, I think Austin and Berlin will surprise people. Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah. I think so. Also the costs, you know, they've learned from Shanghai too. So the efficiencies and CapEx efficiencies and all that, they're going to be pumping out these Model Ys like so cheaply, and gross margins will increase. It's going to be, it's going to be a good year in 2022. That's my take.
It will be. Yeah.
So I'm curious, what's your overall position, like in terms of Tesla across all of your accounts, your IRA, personal and fund account? Have you changed anything? I mean, I know with your fund account, you switched over to going into some long puts. You sold, what was it, 1,000 strike puts?
Long-dated? We sold 1,000 strike puts back at the end of the first quarter, or the very beginning of the second quarter of this year. I think in March or April, we started transitioning our stock to the stock we had in the fund into those going short 1,000 strike puts of June 2023. So way out in the month, way out. You know, deep, you know, because I feel by then for sure, you know, the stock's going to be above $1,000 a share by then. And if not, it'll be close to it, you know, and we were selling them for $500 each, you know, so, you know, anything, as long as the stock was over $500 by June 2023, we'd make a profit on that trade basically. And so, so that's going well. Yeah. We've held on to that position, and it's performed well. I forget what they're trading at lately. I think they're like $350 or something, or so we've made a good amount on that already. And then in my personal account, I still hold a bunch of Tesla shares and a few Tesla options. I think I sold just a small amount to pay for like my taxes. I'm paying taxes quarterly now, pretty big tax bill on a quarterly basis. Yeah. And so every quarter, my accountants are sending me like, hey, you got to send this check in right away. I'm like, oh crap. And, so that's hurtful, but you know, I'm just doing what I have to do and pay my taxes and such, and living in the most expensive state, and just, you know, eat my medicine or whatever you call it, I guess, bite the bullet. And my IRA account, you know, I don't really trade that actively. My personal account, that's taxable, because I don't want to create more crazy tax consequences than I have to. Mm-hmm. So if I trade in my personal accounts, it's like, you know, that's separate from the fund. Then, you know, I do some speculative stuff that's not really well researched or well thought out, just like my hunches or whatever, maybe in my IRA. And I did sell like 20% of my Tesla shares a few months or a month or two ago, just to help fund some private investments I was doing, which turns out from the new tax law changes that I might have to sell those private investments out of my IRA in a couple of years. Who knows what happens with the tax laws on that stuff. But and I actually bought some like really long-term NVIDIA call options, a decent amount. And I bought some Ethereum in my IRA. Now that Interactive Brokers offers you the ability to buy Ethereum. That was actually my personal account on margin. I bought the Ethereum. Can't do that in your IRA. But I did buy some Ethereum finally. And then in my IRA, just a couple speculative things that haven't really panned out. Nothing too big other than the NVIDIA calls. That's kind of and I bought some long-term Tesla call options to kind of cancel out the Tesla shares I sold in case Tesla does really run up. Then at least I have those long-term call options that'll help offset the opportunity cost of selling the shares.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Interesting stuff. Yeah. I feel like, I'm just like, mostly just holding on, taking the slow road.
The slow and boring thing is usually the best performing way to invest. You know, buy and hold and hold those things. And you know, every once in a while, there's like a period where the stock will just run up like it did in 2019, 2021, 2013, 2014. But all the time in between, you're way better off just holding the stock. You know, and
yeah, I think one of my big things was, you know, when Tesla did its 10x or more than 10x, you know, basically almost like 20x, right, in 18 months. One of my big things was like, you know, if I don't have confidence that the 10 to 20 year time window, like Tesla can really do like another like big jump, I was planning to just say, okay, I'll take some off the table because I don't have confidence like 10 to 20 years down the road, right? And that was kind of my big push into kind of AI and full self-driving, and also interviewing James Dalma like, you know, 20 times or something on my channel. Yeah. I was like trying to figure out like, okay, how serious is like Tesla's potential, you know, from the 10 to 20 year mark, right? And I got convinced that I thought, Tesla was under the radar becoming like an AI powerhouse. And that kind of convinced me that this is maybe actually just getting started. And then with AI Day and when Elon announced the humanoid, that was my big kind of like my big bet. Like I really felt like the whole full self-driving was a prelude to a possible bigger AI play, which would be, you know, robots and stuff like that. And so when Elon announced that, I'm like, oh my gosh, like he's really doing it. Like he's really turning Tesla into an AI company, and he's doing it like it's just the craziest thing, because it's not something like he probably forecasted when he started Tesla, obviously, you know, it's something like he's like stumbled along. And so, just having this kind of like the 10 to 20 year, like, story just play out where like I'm able to see it more clearly. Nothing's guaranteed, obviously, but it's like, to me, it's almost like Tesla's game to lose, you know?
I loved your interview with James after the AI Day, and he was all excited, and he was talking about how it really blew his mind that, you know, not only are they going over after transportation and energy and taking over those industries, but now they're going to have to go after the whole labor market with the AI bot. Like, what's bigger than that, you know? Replacing all of labor with an automated AI robot, you know? I mean, that's what it is. I mean, that's basically the long-term vision or long-term, you know, goal of that. Or, you know, it's just going to be an enormous, you know, Tesla's going to eat everything else. You know, it's like software is eating the world. No, Tesla's going to be eating the world. So, you know, it's just insane.
I don't know if you caught this, but Andrei Karpathy at AI Day, he mentioned Tesla is making now synthetic animals. And I was like, what?
I didn't see that.
That wording, right? Synthetic animals. I'm like, what in the world? Because a couple of years ago, he started to call like the cars robots, right? Smart, basically robots that will be like made, you know, intelligent with AI through a software update.
Yeah, I've referred to them as like semi-sentient being or semi-sentient robots a few times.
And now he's talking about, you know, it's like synthetic animals. And when I think about that, I'm like, you know, Tesla is like really morphing themselves into something else while special. Still kind of ramping their auto business, right? And I think this is the confusing thing for a lot of people. It's like they go, Tesla's a car company, right? Just like, for example, Apple's a computer company back in the day, right? It's like, but you know, what's happening is Tesla is like going way, way beyond cars right now, you know, or the beginning stages, obviously with a humanoid robot possibly. And there's a whole platform of different possibilities that Tesla can come up with, but, to make a synthetic brain, you know, through neural nets, and then to make a synthetic body, right? And bodies that can emulate human behavior. Yeah, this stuff is like, this is crazy. And
yeah,
I don't know where it stops.
It's mind blowing. I mean, that labor, you know, if he can produce thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of that, you know, think about every time you go up his euro, number of those AI bots and, you know, what he could do with that. You know, he might not, I kind of hypothesize that he won't sell them. He'll lease them to people and that he can retain the right to call them back to work on magnanimous projects he wants it to work on, whether it's going to Mars and to build stuff on Mars later or some other kind of human emergency issue or so. I don't know. So, but whether he sells them or leases them out, like they'll have, you know, they'll mass produce them, you know, tens of hundreds of thousands, maybe millions eventually, who knows, but imagine the capacity of what that can be, what can be done. These bots can be working, I don't know, 20 hours, maybe they need to charge 4 hours a day. I don't know, but they'll be working like way more than a human can. They can do stuff, you know.
Yeah,
it's going to be insane.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things is I think the humanoid robot will have humble beginnings, and I'm not really looking for kind of, you know, this crazy, you know, super capable, you know, humanoid right off the bat. Obviously, it's going to take several iterations. But that said, I think one of the things that I think like people can discount kind of the optimism or the expectations of, let's say, Tesla going into this, you know, synthetic animal / you know, AI robot. But the thing that I think is difficult for people to discount what's going to happen is the profitability of Tesla. And see, it's one thing if as a business, it's one thing if Tesla's like breaking even and they're just trying to support their car business, et cetera, and they're just getting by. It's another thing when Tesla has like billions of positive cash flow every quarter that they can actually just reinvest into big bets. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that people still are coming to grasp with in terms of investors, which is the cash generating kind of potential or reality of Tesla right now. Like last quarter, adjusted EBITDA was $2.4 billion. And so, I mean, you take whatever, you know, GAAP and non-GAAP profits, but then, you know, you also have, you know, additional, you know, ways for cash flow. And what is Tesla going to do with all that? You know, they're not going to just stockpile more cash. They have enough cash for emergency. So they're just going to get more and more aggressive, spending billions and billions of dollars. So if you thought AI Day was something with like, you know, the infrastructure, the chip team, the training team, 1,000 labelers, all this stuff, if you thought that was something, wait until like a year or two or 3 years from now, when Tesla has so many like billions per quarter, they don't know what to do with. They're just going to be spending massively on the biggest bets possible. And that's the thing about like Elon Musk is like for some reason, his mind, it works super pragmatically when he looks at stuff like this, where it's like, he's able to say, okay, you know, let's basically, you know, this is the obvious move. This is the obvious logical move without emotions. You know, it's just like, this is what we're going to do and this is how we're going to do it. And I think that type of combination of having billions of dollars every quarter to spend with positive cash flow, and then this whole just being in the hottest field in the next 20 years, you know, AI, robots, etc. And then combine that with Elon's kind of like super pragmatic, you know,
vision.
And also,
do you think they get to a point where they have so many billions? I mean, you can only allocate so much at a time. I think he's talked about a couple of times, like can't build 10 factories at once efficiently, or you can't deploy so many billions. Do you think they'll start acquiring other companies, like substantial companies other than like Roman, or, you know, they've acquired Maxwell Technologies. They've acquired some smaller things, but do you think they'll acquire some bigger ones, whether it's like OpenAI or whoever? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, a lot of the AI talent, a lot of the AI world is basically just like people, and it's all about just hiring people. And so what Tesla will be able to do is they'll be able to hire the best by offering more competitive packages. So up until this point, like Tesla has kind of been on the cheap side in terms of like what they pay, especially AI talent. So you really have to believe in Tesla's mission, but as they have more cash cushion, they can go after whoever they want and pay you know, what a Google can pay or whatever, what a Facebook can pay. And basically, they'll be able to hire, you know, the best, whoever they want, you know, in terms of AI talent. And I think the best use of acquisitions is kind of like what Tesla did with Hybar and with Grohman and all these others that have these outside expertise that Tesla doesn't have, whether it's like some type of manufacturing process or something that is just, you know,
that I think complements their business, not like,
yeah,
not like the, another version of what they're already doing.
Yeah, like the core innovation of like basically, you know, neural nets and the whole AI infrastructure, Tesla can just continue to hire people, you know, the best of the best. But yeah, I think, I don't even know if they need to acquire robotics companies, but I'd definitely be open to that. If there's like a really smart team, like basically, I don't know if it would be necessary for the technology, but maybe for the team. But yeah, it's, I don't know. It just seems like, the next 10 to 20 years, all this billions of dollars per quarter is just going to be going increasingly more into R&D and investment. And I was thinking this past week, like one of the things about Elon that I'm learning a lot from is that Elon knows how to fire people. You know, it's like if it's not going well, he'll give them a chance, a couple chances, but after a while, he'll cut his losses.
Yeah,
you know, because he understands the greater, bigger mission at hand is at risk. You know, it's like, it's too risky to, and it's too big of a loss to have someone who's not capable of doing it. And that's the thing also with AI, with robotics and humanoid, all this stuff is if it doesn't work out, he's going to cut, you know, like, and get the right people until he gets, you know, something happening. And so
we've seen this a lot.
Yeah.
He does it a lot.
Over and over, this is what he does.
For years. You know? It used to be like one of those things that the Bears would always harp on, like, hey, they're losing tons of people hand over fist. But really it's like sometimes people just know right away they don't fit and they leave, or Elon squeezes them out or whatever, or maybe just lets them go and it looks like they quit or something. But yeah, he's been doing it for a long time. It's been one of his biggest strengths. That's very underrated. People think it's a weakness, but it's actually, I think, one of their biggest strengths.
Yeah, definitely. In terms of the market overall, I'm wondering, do you have any macro concerns at all? How are you seeing the markets going forward until the end of the year?
Yeah, the macro markets are so complicated. I think anyone who thinks that they know, like with probability, like with a high probable conviction of where it's going, is kind of full of it. I think, you know, there's so much uncertainty always in the macro markets, and you know, you have this like debt ceiling shenanigans and U.S. politics and the infrastructure bill, you know, all that stuff getting delayed, and there's always going to be headlines about inflation coming. And, you know, I think one thing I do think is I think the guidelines that the Fed gave in Powell's last testimony or whatever is like sometime in August next year, they might start doing something or changing their, you know, not increasing rates, but like stop buying bonds or something. But I think they're going to continue to delay, because I think what was assumed in that timeline is that, like, he mentioned in one of the questions he answered later, that, you know, they anticipate a strong employment report going forward. And what I do think is disconnected from a lot of whether it's the Fed or just macroeconomists, maybe. And there's some people that do point this out, and I agree with them when they do point it out, is that there's a huge segment of the population that's just not going back to work, you know, like. And, you know, you had this last 2 years of disruption with COVID, and they figured out other ways without having to get, maybe they figured out they don't need to work and they can rely on their significant other, or they have some other income stream. And, I just think there's a huge shortage of employees out there. You know, there's so many jobs out there, but not many people are going to fill these jobs. And so that's going to be evident in the upcoming employment reports. And I think it'll continue to delay the Fed from tightening, you know, and it'll keep rates low indefinitely for a long time still. So I think that, you know, there's still going to be concern and worry that the rates are coming back up sooner or later, but I just don't see that. I think we're kind of locked into this. As long as kind of there's a deflationary force of technology to kind of offset some amount of inflation that otherwise would be happening from all this printing, I think that we'll just have, we're kind of in this dance where we're just kind of be locked into low interest rates, you know, perhaps indefinitely. I just don't see 2 or 3% plus interest rates by the Fed going happening again anytime soon or ever, maybe. Mm-hmm. That's my opinion. I could be very wrong. You know, I'm not talking with high conviction on that. I'm just, that's sort of where I, what I think is most likely of the possibilities. I don't think we're going back to like 5% interest rates. What do you have any thoughts on the macro markets or any opinion?
Macro, the market and the perspectives, it's all about probabilities. And while I do agree that I think the highest likely scenario is low interest rates for quite a bit, quite a while. I think there always is that kind of scenario where it kind of interest rates go out of control in term. I wouldn't say like completely out of control, but the Fed, there's always a possibility the Fed loses control, you know? Mm-hmm. And this is a debate, like up until now, like some people think the Fed has basically mastered the ability to control the whole monetary system and the whole economy through various different means. And so some people think the evolution of the Fed has come to this point where the economy and investing is more stable than it was before because of all the lessons learned. But a flip side is there could be forces in the economy and the markets that actually overpower the role of the Fed and mm-hmm. could kind of, there's always a scenario of instability, you know?
Yeah, like how far does China's crackdown go? Or, you know, are there more Evergrandes in China that's going to disrupt the stability of the whole global financial system, for example?
Yeah. Like another example is with the U.S., the federal debt. And, you know, people don't talk about interest payments at all, you know, nowadays because low interest rates, all this stuff. But, like, you know, if interest rates spike a bit and, you know, even at interest rates at 3 or 4%, and if the federal debt continues to rise to 30 or 40 trillion, who knows? And you're going to have a significant portion of the U.S. government's budget every year. You know, you could have perhaps even 50% go into interest payments eventually. It could just kind of spiral. It depends, you know, like interest rates are brutal if you have a lot of debt. And mm-hmm. it could cause instability. I'm optimist overall, though. Like, for example, the 5 or 10 year view, even though I view there's always possibilities of instability and things getting out of control, I think the most likely thing is you have the biggest push of technology, of AI, of efficiencies, of big markets, right? Of global markets, of huge platforms. And all of this stuff is working together. So for the next 10 years, you know, I would imagine that there's going to be an immense amount of economic value and productivity and growth established by, you know, big companies and economies. So I'm like super bullish long term, but it's like the danger, though, is to think that that's the only possibility. You know, it's like I'm betting on it, but I always like some kind of.
There's always other, you know, dark scenarios that could happen and. There's black swan events we can't even think of that will happen sooner or later. And how do we rebound off of those? So yeah, there's lots of uncertainty, and it's hard to even, it's really hard to predict, you know. It's just a crapshoot in my mind, the macroeconomy in a lot of ways, but you know, there will be ups and downs as always, but yeah, I do think we're in a decade, like you said, of innovation and technology. That's a force for good in the economy, productivity, and that productivity will skyrocket. And those benefits of that skyrocketing economic output need to be distributed in a way that's somewhat fair, so that so many people aren't so far left behind that it doesn't create a bigger have and have not disparity. You know, that's one worry.
Yeah. What's your take on the whole $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill? Do you think it's going to pass? Do you think it's going to be trimmed down? What's your kind of take on all this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I try to the people I read or follow or, you know, have opinions on this stuff that I respect, you know, that's how I form my opinion. Like, I don't have any inside info. I don't know anyone down there or anything, but and people write report, you know, I, I just think that one way or another, there will be some infrastructure bill passed. It may not be that $3.5 trillion. It might be something much smaller. And it sounds like maybe the major tax increases are not as likely as they were a month or a few months ago. And so for that reason, maybe they have to lower from $3.5 trillion to $2 trillion or whatever. So that's sort of where it seems like things are now. But I have, you know, no idea. Hopefully this week it gets worked out. It doesn't ruffle the market too much with the debt ceiling and all this stuff, all this talk. You know, the market loves to panic whenever there's an opportunity to do so. And so hopefully on a couple weeks here, a few weeks here, that should be really good for Tesla. It's not overshadowed by some bad macro market fluctuations. Do you have any thoughts on that stuff?
Infrastructure? So I want to ask your opinion on this. So it seems like you have, you know, Manchin and Sinema, the two kind of moderate senators who are demanding slash, you know, asking for a much lower price tag, right, on this $3.5 trillion dollar bill. And you know, my sense is it could go down, you know, maybe to like 2.2 seems like a decent, you know, compromise figure.
$2 trillion, decent amount.
It's interesting. Once you get into trillions, it's like, I kind of think that they should just call it billions, call it 2,200 billion. That would be a better kind of check on people. But I'm thinking like, where are all the other senators in the Democratic Party who are concerned about this $3.5 trillion, you know, bill, this number? It doesn't seem like there's a ton of, you know, Democratic senators that are really concerned about this price tag. It just seems like there's just like two of them. And so it makes me think like the progressive movement in America, especially in the Democratic Party, has really kind of taken hold, where it seems like you have, like, for example, Bernie Sanders and AOC and others have kind of almost had their way in terms of setting an agenda, right, for spending. And now it's in gridlock because it seems like most of the Democratic Party, like, it seems like 48 senators are, like, all for it or whatever, right? But there's, like, two that aren't. So it seems like the progressives have really, you know, set their agenda, have really dominated, right, this whole kind of approach. And my take is that Biden is going along with the high price tag for bargaining purposes. Like, he's a good bargainer, in my opinion. Like, Biden knows what he's doing. Like, he's not going to insist on a $3.5 trillion price tag. He's okay with, you know, something like low twos or something. But the question, though, is, are progressives going to be okay with that, you know, with lowering it? And right now, they don't have a choice if they can't get majority. But one of the big questions is, like, wait a minute, what's going to happen 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Will the Democratic Party, like, let's say, hold on to control, but will there be more senators that actually aren't, you know, going to fight the other side? And will you have a greater than 50, you know, or more senators just follow the progressive agenda? And then what's going to happen at that point? You're going to have like spending and spending just, you know,
that's true.
Unlimited. It's definitely,
hopefully, you know, the massive tech innovation, economic productivity and output will sort of keep up with the massive spending increases that will be wanted by the legislators.
I mean, for me, it's like I understand the whole theory behind spending and what it does to the economy and how it's necessary. And like, one of the issues is this whole wealth inequality gap, right? That you just mentioned, and it's a big issue. But my take though is that spending needs to be done in a smart way, in a wise way that actually is not just a bunch of special interests all trying to get their own way, but is really like a big bang for your buck. It's really going to move the needle, you know? And I don't know, it just seems like things are being rushed and pushed through so fast, just trying to pass this big, you know, bill. And it is kind of concerning to me.
And it's not like, I mean, a politician, to be a politician, it attracts like a certain type of person. And, you know, it's not our best and brightest minds, you know, doing this. If it was like Elon Musk and his team of engineers, I'd be like, okay, maybe they're figuring something out that seems like it's going to work out long term. But, you know, it's just kind of scary thinking about some of these, a lot of the people, a lot of people of power are like 90 years old. And, you know, and then there's people that are like 30 years old that are like AOC that are like nuts on the other end of the spectrum too. And like, it's just like, it's just a little worrying. Yeah. I'm glad there's a lot of people that have to agree on stuff. I think it's a good political year when nothing passes maybe and they don't spend more money and they just can't get things changed, you know, because they just add on laws. I mean, Elon's been a big fan. We talk about what Elon says a lot, but he's talking about sunset laws and, you know, we just get more and more regulation and laws and it gets out of control after a while.
Yeah. What's your take on kind of Elon maybe feeling left out a bit with the Biden administration? So yeah, in the recent like
times on it now, I agree. Yeah. I've seen it from the beginning. Like I remember there was like some video that the, you know, US government or the White House put out about like EVs, like a 5-minute commercial about EVs and like someone's picking up her friend in a Ford or a GM Volt and they'd go for a ride and they talk about EVs and they mentioned GM a couple times or Ford and they don't mention Tesla once. And I remember retweeting that. It was like one of my most popular tweets. And like, that was like that was like 6 months ago. And ever, you know, it's just been so obvious over time that they just like totally are ghosting Elon and his companies, Tesla and SpaceX, like two of the most American success stories you can have, you can hope for, are right before our eyes. And we all know it. And for some reason, the current administration is just totally ghosting them and doesn't mention them or at an EV summit and doesn't acknowledge sending up US civilians into space around orbit. And what about next time when they send them to the moon or Mars? Now are they going to acknowledge it? Or are they going to, what are they going to do then? You know, like assuming the current administration is still in power, whether it's Biden or Kamala or whatever, you know? So I just think it's kind of really fishy. And while I still put the probability as low, it's sort of creeping up, the probability that Elon one day kind of relocates to China. He's wooed by China to come over there and just give up on America, you know, keep the stuff there, but make his headquarters of doing everything from China going forward. I mean, it's a low probability. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I think instead of like a 5%, maybe it's a 10% now or so. I don't know. It just seems like he's not happy with the current administration, especially. It's just unfortunate, sad. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts about it?
Yeah. I actually, I look at it from different angles. Like one side, yeah, I see, you know, Tesla, Elon being left out, et cetera. UAW having an outsized influence, it seems like, you know, in the Biden administration. So a while back, I can't kind of give the full details, but someone showed me, how do I say this? Basically, I was able to see firsthand, first source information that Biden was about to buy a Tesla, actually.
What? Wow.
But this was a while back. I'm not going to say when, but... he didn't buy it because there was some issues where he had to lease it and there was like, yeah, but,
title issue or something maybe.
With yeah.
UAW law or something. Right?
Yeah. Something like he actually wanted to actually, and, he liked the Tesla a lot and, but he ended up not getting it. But, I actually got firsthand, like it was more than just a rumor. It was like something I saw or heard that was confirmed. It made me think that I think Biden is a bit more political. I want to say he's politically savvy, you know, where it's not like he doesn't like Tesla. He doesn't know Tesla exists, you know. I think he understands like what Tesla's all about, but he does have like a lot of allegiances, and he needs to carry different groups. You know, he needs to carry the progressives. That's why he, you know, he caters to Sanders and AOC. He needs to carry the UWA. That's why he, you know, he caters to them. Yeah. And so he knows how to work the groups he needs, you know. And it doesn't mean that he's like antagonistic, you know, to Elon Musk or to Tesla. That's my personal opinion, you know. I don't think that's it's malicious in any way. But my only concern is with this EV tax credit, I just hope that Tesla doesn't get screwed by it, you know, like some detail or some like thing that just messes everything up, you know. As long as the EV tax credit is fair, you know, then I'm just happy. It doesn't have to be that much, you know. It just needs to be, even if there's no EV tax credit, just as long as it's a fair playing field, I'm happy, you know.
Yeah, they don't need an EV tax credit for Tesla to succeed. I mean, the perception will be that it's incredible for Tesla, but I don't know if it meaningfully changes anything in Tesla's trajectory of being a successful EV maker and such. But yeah.
So we'll see. I think we'll know in the next few weeks, hopefully, you know, if there's going to be this whole thing passes or not, the whole reconciliation bill, and if, you know, what the EV tax credit is going to look like. I think it's probably, to me, like, I think it's one of the biggest possible, like, biggest catalysts going forward. Like, when I look at some events, I always like think about, like, will this matter, like, 1 or 2 years later? Like, is it really an event that is like a long-term significant impact or not? And like, usually like 5 or 10,000, 20,000 delivery numbers, ER, like earnings, like little back and forth, like that doesn't really change the game 5 to 10 years later. But with an EV tax credit, that's like, let's say potentially 10 years long, and you get at least 5,000, if not more, per car. This is actually huge. I mean, to me, this is like really a game changer.
And I
don't know. It's just, it seems like almost, because it's unsure, there's a question mark in terms of if it'll pass and when it'll pass. People aren't grasping it, but I think Tesla is kind of waiting on this. And I think if it passes, you're going to see Tesla go all in, and they're going to announce
more factories right away.
Like, they're going to announce expansion, new factories, push forward all their plans. It's going
to
be big.
They'll probably announce another factory in the U.S., you'd think, to kind of keep up with the allegiance of the U.S. government passing this EV bill, like, hey, we'll do another factory in Ohio now or something.
I mean, the big risk is if, you know, Democrats lose in 2024, and if they, you know, if it gets repealed or something, then that's an issue. But otherwise, you know, it's a big thing.
One kind of nuance about Tesla, you know, the perception of Tesla versus the actual business of Tesla, you know, we're all fascinated by the stock because that's what we invest in. We buy options sometimes, you know, I may or may not have short option plays on from time to time, you know, it's not too big usually, but so I'm very interested in the short term price movement for that reason a lot of times. But long term, I think Tesla will be wildly successful no matter what, because they don't ever need to raise capital again. Like, you know, 5 years ago, we knew, like, every once in a while, they might need to raise some capital soon, or, you know, we knew that they could, but you wanted them to raise it on favorable terms. You don't want to raise it at a you know, 20 billion market cap when they could be raising it at 100 billion market cap, you know? So it was important, the stock price, for that reason, for their future success and diluting your own shares and such. But I feel like that risk factor is a non-event now. And so for that reason, like, you know, Elon probably doesn't, I would think he almost doesn't care about the stock price. As long as it's not messing up employee morale somehow, you know, then I don't think he really cares, because he knows long term from A to Z where it's going, how it gets there, doesn't really matter to him, you know. So it's a little bit of an interesting difference between now and the perception of Tesla versus the perception of Tesla, you know, 5 or 7 years ago.
Yeah, definitely. I think, like, there's this thing that happened where, like, Tesla's destiny became completely in their hands. Where before it was kind of tied to, you know, raising funds and investor sentiment, et cetera. Did you catch the Code conference with Kara Swisher?
I did.
Yeah, Elon talking about kind of his thoughts on the share price, kind of he thinks it's kind of high, and how...
Well, he said that in the past he said it's high. I don't think he said it's high now necessarily. Like, it doesn't necessarily... It means, like, in the past I've said it's high, it doesn't do anything. So what? So you could infer that he mean that he's saying that it's still too high, but or you could infer that he's implying that, but I don't know if he is necessarily. He doesn't necessarily, you know. I feel like he just he doesn't want to comment on it. He's just mentioning, in the past when I've commented, it hasn't mattered. So That's what I thought. What did you think about
it? Yeah, well, I thought it was also interesting how he gave this warning about margin, you know, where he's like, it's all good when the stock's high and going up, but there's always like a crash and, you know, you get a margin call. Yeah, but I was actually like, oh, hey, Elon is actually like very like, you know, like very aware of the margin call, you know, that.
He knows there's risk. He just pointed out the risk because people don't seem to understand it. But of borrowing cash, you know, because you could borrow cash at a better rate. You know, it's funny. But whether it's Elon Musk or my old boss, Thomas Peterffy, you know, they're both like brilliant minds in their own right. And, you know, I feel like there was someone else in the mix. I was like a brilliant mind. Some of these people that are like so brilliant at so many different things, engineering, software engineering, you know, whatever it is. I feel like one weakness a lot of them have is, you know, stock prices. Like they just don't do good investing. Like if they were an investor themselves, they wouldn't be necessarily a good investor, but they're so amazing at like everything else, you know. Mm-hmm. I just feel like it's a kind of a weird thing I've picked up on over years. And I, you know, so when Elon talks about the stock price or stocks, I always have to know, like, hey, maybe he doesn't, maybe that's not his strength is picking stocks or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a weird, you know, it's sort of a hard thing, you know, some of these people that are so brilliant and smart, they're so used to be able to get things right that when there's something that has so much uncertainty embedded within it, maybe it's so difficult. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So I noticed, at the delivery, on the delivery press release, that they changed the location of Tesla from Palo Alto to Austin, Texas. So I went through like I went through all of the previous, you know, delivery press releases, like past 15 or 20, they're all Palo Alto, you know, because that's where Tesla's headquarters is, right? But this was the first press release to say Austin. And I'm like 99% sure Tesla's moved their headquarters.
Having their annual meeting there now, right?
Yeah, exactly. They just moved their headquarters probably the past month or so or two. I mean, does this change anything? Like, I mean, obviously there's some maybe lower state taxes maybe,
I think it's a good thing. I don't think it's like a big deal, but I think it's a good thing overall. I don't think it's a red flag in any way, put it that way. If anything, it's a good thing marginally, but I don't think, you know, I'm happy they're making changes from a legal perspective to move to a state that's much more, has much more freedom of regulation to do things, you know, and much more friendly to building new, although they have that issue still with not selling Teslas in state or something, which is kind of ironic, you know?
Yeah.
But other than that, I feel like Texas is like a perfect place for a new, you know, a new EV manufacturer and all that. I mean, what did you think about it? Do you think it's a big deal or small?
Yeah.
What's your thought?
I mean, I think it's pretty significant in the sense where, you know, Tesla has always been kind of this California company. You know, this
that's true.
Scrappy tech startup, right? In Silicon Valley and, you know, pioneering, like even their marketing and their whole feel and the crowd that they cater to tends to be kind of tech heavy. And I think by going to Austin, moving their headquarters, like you've got this big, you know, tipping point where you have the factory almost coming online. And you've got, this is a completely different part of, you know, America, even though Austin tends to be liberal too in some ways. But I think it's like, it's in a way Tesla kind of growing up saying, okay, we don't need kind of to be in Silicon Valley. We don't need to be in California. We'll go to wherever, you know, we want to go to, and we'll set up the whole infrastructure that we need, you know, like we'll build the factory. We'll get our people to come.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It also shows to me like Tesla branching off where they have multiple kind of almost headquarters in a sense now, right? So you have Berlin become in Germany with Grumman, all this stuff becoming kind of like a headquarters in Europe, and you have Shanghai becoming a headquarters out there, especially with this new design center and all this stuff. And so you see kind of this global footprint of Tesla expanding, not just with service centers or superchargers, but with real, like, you know, heavy personnel, you know, and factories. Yeah. And this is pretty exciting. You know, it's like Tesla's like becoming multi-continent. And I think they're setting up for something big, you know, in the future, definitely.
Yeah, no, global headquarters Austin, Giga, that's a lot of confidence to Giga Austin as well, like how confident Elon is in that being such a big part of Tesla going forward, you know, not just the factory, but building all kinds of stuff around it, R&D or just senior management relocating there. Yeah.
Yeah. So Tesla is going to release the Tesla FSD beta to new
Yes.
beta testers. So Elon is saying that it could be 1,000 beta testers per day starting, I guess, in about a week or so, or
Yeah.
you know, based on their safety score that they have after they press the button.
Yeah.
Did you press the, did you have a button?
Yeah, I got to
Yeah.
press the button. I've been getting this. The
Okay.
first few days, I couldn't get my safety score to pop up. I had to delete the app on my phone and then reinstall it, and that finally worked. Yeah, my safety score has been most days in the 90s. A couple of days it was like in the 50s or 60s, and that ruined my average. But my app now I'm at like 85 or 86 overall, which is good.
Okay.
So I'm hoping it gets high because I want to be one of those first few weeks or first week or two of people that get it, just to start using it, the 10.2 and beyond. And
Yeah. I mean, if
yeah, it's
you're
really,
if
it's genius to incentivize people to drive more carefully too. But I mean,
Yeah.
what do you think?
I mean, if you're in the 80s, man, you're going to be waiting for a long time.
Well, I'm
You're not getting
thinking that the next several days I'll be more careful now that I can see my score
Yeah. Like,
and
there's
get
no chance you're going to get it this year, I
Well, he said 1,000 a day, I think, right? I first I thought he said 1,000 a week, and I was like,
Yeah.
oh no, now I'm going to be like forever. But 1,000 a day he referenced. So to me, that seems like maybe, I don't know, a few weeks if that's true. Like that, at the most, I'd get it maybe. I don't
Yeah.
know.
Yeah. I think he wants to do 1,000 a day, but it's gonna, it's
Sure.
not, yeah, it's, they're gonna have to, I think, pause it at different points and revamp, you know, do another release. Like, it's gonna be, it's not gonna be a straight, you know, I think,
Yeah. Have
release
you
like
been
that.
using yours? I mean, speaking of that, have you been using yours recently? Or, I mean, do you notice much of a difference in this last release? I mean, it's tough to
Yeah.
things, right?
Yeah. So, with 10.0 and then, with 10.1. So I'm actually, I was actually super impressed by 10.0.
Hmm.
Yeah, so with 9, 9.1, 9.2, like I had mixed opinions where I thought it did well sometimes, but then other times it was like horrendous in terms of like, yeah, the disengagements. Overall though, I felt like Tesla's in the right track, but I thought it was going to be a while, you know, before a wide release. And then with 10.0, I was actually surprised because I was like, wow, it actually feels a lot better. It feels that they've made a lot of refinements. The problem though is like there's always these like difficult situations where it just doesn't do well. And like there was a couple parking lots I was trying to turn into, and I did it, I did each parking lot maybe about 7 or 8 times. And it failed like probably 5 or 6 times out of 7 or 8
Okay.
times. Like, and these are like kind of a little bit difficult, but not too difficult. And
Parking lots are trouble, yeah.
yeah, it's like really tricky. And there's different th situations and scenarios where it still is rough, you
Yeah.
know? And but it's improving dramatically. I think 10.0 showed me like, you know, the pace of improvement is pretty fast. And so I'm actually pretty happy. I think wide release is going to be a slower rollout than most people think. I don't think it's going to be like that everyone gets it. I think it's they'll incrementally release it. And I don't even think you know, I don't know. I'd be surprised if more than 10,000 people get it by the end of the year, maybe 15.
Wow,
Yeah, I don't
really?
think, yeah, I think it's going to be a while. It's going to be a few months where, you know, they're going to have to, you know, push out
Yeah.
releases and stuff, but they'll get it done, you know. I mean, it'll
Yeah.
be, it'll improve definitely, I think.
Yeah, I think this 10.2, I'm really excited. Every version, I'm excited to see the changes and differences. And I watched several videos, and I feel like the 10.2 is going to be meaningful, because that's when you'll have the next, you know, people getting full self-driving beta at the same time. And I think he wants a meaningful step improvement for these new people getting it for the first time. So,
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
that's going to be really a good, and then just every 2 weeks that they're pushing out a new one, that's really fast iteration to me. And so,
yeah, definitely. I think it shows that like removing the radar was a really big deal. It took them a while.
Yeah.
But once they got that out, now they have a foundation where they're actually able to iterate quite fast.
Yeah,
definitely. I was wanting to ask you, do you have any ideas why the Model X is delayed so much right now? It's like 3/4, you know, of no Model X production, basically.
Yeah, it's like the demand is building up. Our lease of our Model X is up this December, January. We ordered a new one like 6 months ago because the wait time was already like 9 months at that time. So we had to put a new order for a new lease to get it, hopefully in January. Hopefully that still sticks. But that was 6 months ago. So now I think the wait time is what, like a year or 9 months or a year now or so? I don't know, it might be longer. And they're probably going to have plans to ramp it up. So yeah, I have no idea. I mean, I know it's this refresh. They want to get the quality right. There's going to be some new like trivial, cool stuff in it. Hopefully some new little surprises versus the Model S refresh, which is great too. Maybe it'll be something a little different about the Model X, I'm wondering. I saw one of the Model X, at the Plaid event, but I didn't go inside and like mess with it. But if they're doing something new, you know, there could be new things beyond even what was shown there in June.
Yeah.
I'm wondering.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts about it? Have you heard anything?
Yeah, I haven't heard. I mean, I guess part of it might be just be like the priority isn't like the top number one priority with Austin and Berlin and all this other stuff going on. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure they want to get it right. Did you see that one photo of the Model S refresh with a regular steering wheel?
Yeah, I thought I saw a photo of that like a few months ago too, maybe, or something like that. But maybe this new article is like from Teslarati or something. I didn't read the article, so I'll come across this evening. But I wonder if that's going to be an option going forward, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I know Marquise Brownlee just tweeted the other night that, you know, that he is now loves the yoke and wouldn't go back now that he's driven his Plaid. And that's how I feel. And that's how people who own it have the yoke. They love it. You know, there's still like the button, you know, the haptic sensing button for the blinkers. Okay. You know, I'm used to it now, but other than that and the honk button, having to remember where that is, those two things, I love the feel of the yoke, you know, steering it way better. I was just driving our Model X today to like go on a trip and I was like, oh, I hate this thing. It just felt like big and clunky and like, you know, it felt like going from an EV back to an internal combustion engine car in a way, you know, once you're used to the yoke. It's just, to me, it's the way to go. People, you know, kick and scream before they try it and they're forced to use it for a while and then they love it. You know, that's what I think is going to be the reaction of 90% of people. You know, there'll be the 10% of people that are going to stick to their guns and hate it no matter what, but who cares? I hope they don't offer the big, I kind of hope they make people get the yoke with the Model S refresh. Really? If people want the Model S, I hope they make it.
Yeah. I just think it's such a big deal for people. I think they should give an option, you know?
You do?
Yeah. Okay. Yoke or regular, just let people choose, you know? Yeah.
Well, the Model X, they didn't give people a choice. They're like, you're going to use these Falcon Wing doors, whether you like it or not. You
know? That's true. But then it's
a non-issue.
Yeah, but it's hard to give an option of, do you want Falcon Wing or no Falcon Wing? You know, it's like different car. You know? Steering wheel is just like, you know,
progressive and just like force feeds it to people what he knows they want. Even if they say they don't want it, he knows that they'll like it. And so I kind of like that about him, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I hope they give an option. did you see any of the Rivian test drive reviews? So they kind of...
article that came out just a few days ago, think on Thursday or Friday or something, like maybe it was last week on Tuesday, I forget what it was, but there was a Bloomberg article about the Rivian test drive. It wasn't very good.
Oh really?
I saw some quotes from it. I didn't read the whole thing, but I saw some quotes in my Twitter feed that came out. But basically the guy was just saying, it didn't ride so well, the seats weren't that comfortable, and there's a lot of like trinkets in it that, you know, are probably going to be very breakable, you know, maybe not necessary, but it definitely is appealing to the outdoorsy person. But, you know, other than that, I'm not sure it's a great car, you know, and that's sort of how I feel. Like, I think it's a cool truck. I hope they succeed for the EV, you know, movement. But, you know, I don't see it from an economics, you know, or from a stock perspective, you know, me, a stock picking or investing perspective. you know, I'm sort of salivating to potentially short it at an $80 billion plus valuation. You know, like I just don't, you know, I don't know if I will or not. It's probably gonna be super expensive, but they're, I think they just filed their IPO stuff on Friday or something. I didn't go through it yet. They have like 50,000 reservations, someone said, on one of the, you know, from it. I don't know. I think it's way, I would think at like a $10 billion valuation, okay, that's a good company. All right, let's see what they can do. But $80 billion as a valuation, that's just like, to me, that's like insulting as a longtime Tesla investor. That's what it feels like. You know, like, this isn't right, you know? I mean, Tesla had to go, you know, $80 billion, they haven't delivered anything yet. I mean, they've, you know, I don't know. What do you think about it?
Yeah. I mean, I was watching some of the test drives. I watched Ben Sullins. He did a test drive. It's interesting. Rivian brought together a bunch of like, you know, influencers, YouTubers, and they let them, they did this crazy mountain, like off-road experience, like all day. Most of the reviews are actually very positive. They actually loved, actually liked it.
But those staged event reviews, that's like not real to me, you know? Like, I feel like you need the reviews on the message boards of people who just bought it and are talking about it. You know, like the old school, like me and you did with the models. You know, the staged reviews, we know from all our EV, you know, new people coming in, like always the stage reviews by Jaguar, whoever, like, oh, this is the next big Tesla killer, and people worry about it. I don't trust that. You know, when it's coordinated by the company, I don't trust it, you know, but tell me more about it. Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me
more about it. I mean, typically, like, you know, you do like a regular test drive in like controlled situation, but Rivian actually let these people like go off road and these crazy, like, you know, maneuvers. They really put it to the test, and the reviews were great. And I think, it seems like, I mean, I'm with you in the sense, like, I personally want to test drive it myself too, and see, like, you know, the early crowd, what they think, especially those who like are really picky as well, you know? But the other kind of thing is with Lucid Air. Some of the early reviews are coming in pretty positive. Of course, that's being more controlled, you know, in terms of what they're letting people do.
But that's a $140,000 car, though. That's crazy. Like, do they think they're going to sell a lot of those? I don't think so. That's nuts.
The car, you know, like, I think with Rivian and Lucid, I mean, I'm not sure, like, how many cars, obviously, they'll sell, but they seem to have made a decent product.
Yeah.
You know, that.
Yeah. I mean, at the right valuation, I think they're a good company. Like Rivian at $10 billion, Lucid at a $4 billion valuation. Okay. Maybe they're like, there's something there, you know?
Yeah.
But $40 or $50 billion valuation for Lucid and $80 billion, you know, IPO will be $80 billion Rivian. I guarantee when it opens for trading, it's going to open at higher than the $80 billion valuation, right? It's probably going to open trading at $100 billion valuation or something. And then you have the book runners, just traditional IPO.
Yeah.
You have the Wall Street book runners, they have their methods to kind of keep the price propped up for a certain amount of time, you know, unless they screw it all the way up like they did Facebook way back. That was like the last time a traditional IPO got really screwed up, I feel like. But, you know, they have their processes in place to kind of keep it propped up at whatever it opens trading or keep it from going below the 80. You know, they need to keep their institutional clients happy with the $80 billion valuation they sold to their institutional clients at, right, for a little while. But at some point, it's going to come crashing down, I think. You know, like mass production is near impossible. You know, like Elon stated it a number of times, you know. You know, these prototypes are amazing. They can announce plans for factories like Nikola Motors did even. Remember when Nikola Motors had their factory day presentation? I mean, I was chomping at the bit to short that Nikola and find different. I did buy puts, you know, failed. You know, they were so expensive.
I bought
puts at one point. But, you know, like, it just seems like another version. I can't see it a different way. I just can't see it a different way than like another, like a more wrapped in a different wrapper, another Nikola Motors and another Lucid, you know, not quite as crazy rolling trucks down hills, but they're going to produce something and they're going to start delivering, but it's gonna be a nightmare. And there's no boss who's like a genius of all time sleeping on factory floors to help figure it out. You know, it's crazy to me. I don't know. These valuations are crazy. I don't see it.
Yeah. No, I agree on the valuation front, but I think Lucid and Rivian are kind of fundamentally different companies than than the Nikola.
The oh, Lord, yeah, they're definitely different, but
the Lordstown.
The story, the narrative is the same. And yeah, to me, it's going like, to not end well.
Yeah, but like for me, there are certain companies like the Lordstown and the Nikola and others who don't have the core engineering, like skills. You know, they don't know what they're doing.
You're saying Pete Rollison's like a core engineer? Like, I don't know.
What I'm saying is like,
maybe they have a few good people there. Maybe they have a few good, I think they probably have a few good people, Rivian with Bezos and Amazon backing it. But
yeah, that's the other thing is you have Rivian with Amazon backing, and you also have Lucid, a potential takeover, you know, who knows, with some Apple or whoever wants to. But yeah, I mean, again, the valuation, if you discard this valuation, obviously, we can't as investors. But
I can't. If they were valued at $4 and $10 billion, in my mind, I'd say, oh, that's interesting companies. I'll watch them. I wouldn't buy them. I'd watch them closely and be interested. I'd watch the reviews, and if the reviews look good, I'd be like, oh, maybe some long term options would be good for like a $20 billion valuation on Rivian, and long term on like $10 billion valuation for Lucid. You know, but that's like long term leaps or something on those valuation bets if I thought the reviews were really good. You know, that's what I would do probably.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, just a little over 2 years ago, Tesla was valued at like, what, $40 billion.
Yeah. Insane. I'm so biased because, you know, I've held Tesla for so many years when they're being spit on by everyone on Wall Street. And now Wall Street's trying to give these other companies these ridiculous valuations. It's just insulting to me. But, I want to get revenge against these Wall Street people that have been, you know, holding Tesla down for so long almost. But I'm not going to trade like getting revenge. I know that's dangerous, but I do think those valuations are ridiculous.
And one last thing is XPeng. So I watched this reveal.
Yeah, XPeng has a lower valuation than Lucid. Did you know that?
Yeah.
All right, anyway, go on with that.
So XPeng has this new, P5 or this new vehicle, right? It's a $25,000 vehicle in China. And they did a reveal, and it was about like an hour long on YouTube. And I was actually like, I was actually impressed. Like they kind of know what they're doing in some ways. Like I haven't driven obviously the product side. I can't, vouch for it firsthand, but yeah, I encourage like people to watch that, reveal. It kind of shows a bit of, how they're thinking and, yeah, interesting. I mean, the valuations still are kind of high.
But my feeling around I didn't watch that. I will watch it. But my feeling around XPeng is them and NIO are both kind of legitimate competitors to Tesla in China. Whether they really become exporters like Tesla is now too is another question. But also in China, it's hard to know. Like, I don't know the political landscape very well at all, or how business necessarily works within the Chinese economy when, governments are trying to prop up EVs, and how far that's being taken with XPeng and NIO and what ways, shapes, or forms. I don't know that detail. So, XPeng to succeed outside of China, I don't know what that would take. But inside China, they seem to be doing really well.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. All right, Emmett, it's going to be a fun week. Going to see what happens with Tesla. We have shareholder meeting coming up the following week, and then earnings coming up just probably in a few weeks as well. It's exciting.
Maybe next time we'll talk. Me and Matt are going to – we're going to probably there's this new big stock we've been buying in our fund, and maybe we're going to release some research out on it in the next week or so. Maybe next time you and I chat, we can talk a little bit about that stock then.
Yeah. Too. Yeah. What's give me a hint at least. I mean, you don't have to reveal it. Just give me what field is it in, or.
It's something I think many of your followers, will probably become more familiar with in time, so we'll see.
Okay. What field is it? Software, or is it? Like,
I can't go into that at this time.
Okay.
But soon we want to make sure, it's a familiar field.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Got it. Okay. All right, Emmett, take care. And we'll talk later. Okay.
Okay. We'll see.